You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
One week away. Thankfully, that's not until actual basketball, of course. The Rockets are flying up to Denver today to begin their tough four-game road trip on Friday night against the second-seeded Nuggets. But on this second consecutive off day since the stunning defeat earlier this week to the New Orleans Pelicans without Anthony Davis and three other starters, we are officially 1 week away from the NBA trade deadline for this season, which occurs at 2 p.m. Houston time next Thursday, February 7th. And courtesy of Jonathan Fagan, Rockets beat writer for the Houston Chronicle, we've got a lot to talk about on today's show. So let's get right to it. First off, welcome in to another episode right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Thursday, January 31st, we're going to be spinning it forward, not just looking at the upcoming four-game road trip. Certainly the Rockets would like to get the bad taste out of their mouths from that stunning loss Tuesday evening to the undermanned New Orleans Pelicans. That goes without saying. As far as whether they can do it, it's going to be tough. A back-to-back in Denver and Utah at altitude, one of the toughest in the league. Then you finish it up next Wednesday at Sacramento, a rapidly improving young team that's especially difficult at home. It's a tough stretch for the Rockets, which is why they needed to take care of business on the front end at home against the New Orleans Pelicans. Unfortunately, they weren't able to do that. Now they're 29-21, still in the 5 spot in the Western Conference standings, but with a very tenuous hold with many teams directly in their rearview mirror. And as far as how they can improve their play, certainly some things are within their own control, such as bringing more effort from the outset in games. We discussed that in Tuesday night's recap. They're, especially in the first halves, they're stunning lapses on the defensive end of the floor, just basic commitment, letting guys get to the rim, not paying attention away from the ball. There are things that they can control. But there are also roster composition issues, which the trade deadline is their last chance to truly address other than the buyout market this season. So with this being a second consecutive off day with no games, it's an opportunity for us here at Locked On Rockets to take a step back from the micro and look a bit more at the macro. How can the Rockets solve some of these issues to put their roster in a better position once the season really gets meaningful in March, April, and of course, we hope, May and June? So on today's show, we're going to be discussing moves they can make through the lens of a great article written by Jonathan Fagan, Rockets beat writer for the Chronicle. Rockets trade list, versatile defender with catch-and-shoot skills, which you can call up either at Jonathan's Twitter page, Jonathan_Fagan is his handle, or you can go to HoustonChronicle.com. We'll also be touching on the Daniel House Jr. contract stalemate near the end of our usual three-part show and why I still think there's a positive resolution coming, maybe not within days, but certainly within weeks, that ultimately brings him back to the Rockets as long as he is not moved in a trade by next Thursday's deadline. To start off with, though, let's lead with the news, which, according to Jonathan, is not that the Rockets are interested in a trade. Saying that Daryl Morey is aggressive at a trade deadline is like saying water is wet. That goes without saying. Of course, he's active. The news, according to Jonathan Fagan, is that the Rockets are optimistic that a deal actually will come to fruition. The exact quote reading from his story, having been unable to swing deals at their previous self-imposed deadlines in December in time for players involved to be aggregated in subsequent deals, and in January when they wanted to move Carmelo Anthony in time to use his roster spot for Kenneth Faried, the Rockets are, according to individuals with knowledge of their thinking, confident they will make a change at the actual deadline. That is a very encouraging sign, because generally speaking, the Rockets do a good job as an organization of trying to limit expectation. They understand why you don't want, it's not just about the fans, it's also the players in the locker room, thinking that there are reinforcements on the way if you're not going to be able to deliver on that promise. So I think the fact that they're leaking that story, that's a positive sign in and of itself, that they think there's something that they can do by next Thursday's deadline. But what's more interesting, you read down in Jonathan's story, is that the Rockets are hoping to land a forward who fits as a versatile defender with catch-and-shoot skills, but who also could help with their poor defensive rebounding. And the analogy that Jonathan makes is that it shows more of an interest in players like JaMychal Green of Memphis, a team that's definitely going to sell off, rather than Garrett Temple. He says it would also indicate far less of a chance to chase Courtney Lee or Kent Bazemore, players who don't fit with the rebuilding Knicks and Hawks and who had previously been thought of as potential Rockets targets. Now, why the Rockets would want to go bigger as far as a forward? They've been a bottom-tier defensive rebounding team all season long, and they're starting a 6'6", 33-year-old power forward in P.J. Tucker, who is now averaging close to 36 minutes per game. So the need is definitely there. I know 3-and-D is the popular buzzword ever since the Rockets lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute in the offseason, but when you look at this roster as it is currently constructed, I think there are 7 players that you feel pretty good, assuming health, are definitely going to be a part of your playoff rotation. That being Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella, that's your starting 5 when healthy, and Austin Rivers and Kenneth Faried off the bench, Faried as your backup 5. I also think that unless Daniel House Jr. is used in a trade at the deadline, he will ultimately be back one way or another, and they have seen enough that he will fit. So really, we can say there are 8 players that you already feel pretty good about, and that's before even getting to Gerald Green and James Ennis, 2 guys who have been in your rotation all season long. And they could be in your playoff rotation as well. I just don't think either Gerald or Ennis has done enough to where you would say 100% you are going to play them in the playoffs. They are options, but conceivably you could upgrade. But the point is, within those top 8, and you brought in House and Rivers during the season, you have improved your on-ball perimeter defense. And having good results so far from starting Eric Gordon at the 3 spot, they're not desperate to add wing defense just for the sake of wing defense. You can do it, yes, but you need to address some other issues as well, because it's not like there's a clear path to minutes. At the most, once you get down to the playoffs, the most largest rotation that Mike D'Antoni would turn to, in my opinion, is 9, and I think ideally it would be 8, considering all the off days in the playoffs, the priorities with veterans that most teams use, not just Mike D'Antoni. Well, you may already have 8, so you're not looking to bring in a body just to bring in another body. This is not the depth issues we saw the Rockets have in November and early December before House's emergence, before you signed Austin Rivers and Kenneth Faried. If you bring in someone, he needs to potentially upgrade one of those top 7 or 8, at least in a circumstance. Not saying he has to immediately jump, but there at least needs to be a path to where if you give up assets, even if it's just a couple of second-round picks, to where it makes sense to bring that player in. You don't just make a deal to make one. And that's where the rebounding thing could really fit, because they've been a bottom-tier team all year, and it's been even worse since losing Clint Capella. But even when healthy, a lot of it traces back to having a 6'6" starting power forward who now, based on a lot of the injuries, is averaging nearly 36 minutes per game. So he's undersized to begin with, he's 33 years old, and with his style, there is no way that you can play him 36 minutes per night and not have it take a toll on the aggressiveness that PJ Tucker can use on the defensive end of the floor. So really, if you're able to bring in, say, a JaMychal Green from Memphis, then not only are you bringing in more minutes off the bench, but you're also potentially making PJ Tucker more effective as well. If you can get Tucker closer to 30 minutes per game rather than 36, you're giving him more energy for the defensive end, the type of hard-nosed play that we saw from him a year ago. And you might also be helping his rebounding. For his career, PJ averages 5.7 rebounds per game in 28.5 minutes. This season, in nearly 36, he's averaging 6.2 rebounds per game. That's an increase of literally half of a rebound, despite playing over 7 more minutes per game. So that tells you he's rebounding at a lower proportional rate, in part because his legs are probably a little bit tired. And his last 5 games from 3, he's shooting just 32%, including 2 of 9 in Tuesday's ugly loss to the Pelicans, in which he played 37 minutes, had 7 rebounds. The game before that, he had just 2. Game before that, 3. So he's been very uneven on the glass. And I think tired legs from having to play that many minutes, high leverage, often guarding the other team's best player, yeah, it takes a toll on the things that he does do well. So if you're able to bring in a guy who can spell him more frequently, not only do you bring in more length to just rebound better in general, you're also better optimizing a guy who has been indispensable for you on the defensive end of the floor. And when you look at the 7 or 8, you can cover the 1 through 3 spots pretty well, because you're starting Paul, Harden, and Gordon, assuming health. You've got Austin Rivers off the bench. You're going to bring Daniel House Jr. back at some point. Gerald Green, someone they trusted even in the playoffs a year ago. All of those guys are fine, 1 through 3. It's the 4 spot where right now you don't even have a true backup power forward, and your starter is 6'6" and 33 years old. Now, with Jermichael Green in particular, the one difficulty to that, he makes close to $8 million a season, so the Rockets' most obvious trade ship, Marquese Chriss, making about $3.5 million, that's not going to be enough. You'd probably have to throw in Nene to make the math work, and Nene is beloved in the Rockets' locker room. It would be a loss, certainly. However, with the addition of Kenneth Faried playing as well as he is, it's a loss that the Rockets can absorb, in my opinion, especially with Clint Capela due back after the All-Star break, because now you feel pretty good about your 48 minutes at the center spot between Clint Capela and Kenneth Faried. So while I don't think the Rockets want to throw in Nene, he's very valued, and especially they love his locker room presence. At the same time, because you've gotten Faried, you could conceivably deal Chris and Nene plus a couple of seconds and make the Jermichael Green deal work. So that's just one example. There may be other opportunities in which players make smaller salaries in which you don't have to throw in Nene, and you can just do Marquese Chriss plus whatever the assets are, be it prospects, draft picks, whatever it may be. But generally speaking, I agree that that's the one need. You don't need a 5 anymore. I'd said before you picked up Kenneth Faried, that was a big need. Well, the way Faried has played, and now you have Clint Capela coming back, I think you feel pretty good about the 5 spot. Maybe you want someone who can play some small ball 5 at times in certain lineups, but for the most part, I think you're looking, you want more defense, you want more rebounding, but it needs to be a very specific role. I don't think you're going to upgrade unless it's someone that's magically not even thought to be available that Daryl Morey can pluck, which you never know, but it's going to be pretty tough, in my opinion, to upgrade the 1 through 3 spots when healthy. I think they feel pretty good about that. What you look at is the 4 spot with P.J. Tucker's size, his age, his minutes total, and not really having a true backup behind him. That, to me, is the easiest spot to upgrade, so I'm in full agreement that it's something the Rockets should target. You can bring in more length, you can bring in more rebounding. That's the best way you can get that rebounding without compromising the playmaking, the scoring that you have currently at the 1 through 3 spots. So I do think it's an emphasis for the Rockets. It's more complex than just 3 and D, because I don't think, certainly not Luke Bamute, maybe not even Trevor Ariza would fit in terms of what the Rockets really need right now, despite what the narratives are. What they need is more rebounding. That's been the most consistent issue for this team when you look at their defensive performance this year relative to last. And to me, this makes a lot of sense in terms of their formula at the trade deadline. Now it's just a matter of whether they can go out and execute that. They do have a few tools at their disposal. However, I'm cautious in how aggressive I expect them to be, because I do think there are definite limits to what they're willing to give up at this year's deadline. More on that in segment 2 momentarily. Now, continuing our way through our 3-part trade deadline preview show, first couple of segments about the Jonathan Fagan story posted on his Twitter feed at Jonathan_Fagan, Rockets tradeless versatile defender with catch and shoot skills. And then we'll finish up in segment 3 with a little bit of talk about Daniel House Jr. and why I think he fits into the trade deadline calculus as well. We spent the first segment talking about the Rockets' desire for a forward, not just with catch-and-shoot skills, but also with defense and rebounding ability. More of a Jermichael Green type than, say, a Garrett Temple or even a Kent Bazemore. Jermichael Green is a nice name. Last year, he averaged over 10 points and 8 rebounds per game in 28 minutes. He can definitely help from a rebounding perspective. This year, he's averaging 10 points, 6.3 rebounds per game in 22 minutes. But he's certainly not the type of name where you say, wow, we got Jermichael Green, this changes everything. And I know for a Rockets season that at 29 and 21, while it's stabilized, it's certainly below fan expectations going into the year. For some, you may not see that as sufficient. However, the reason that I don't expect the Rockets to be that much more aggressive at the deadline, unless they can somehow shake free an Anthony Davis, is because of the importance of this summer and future years for the Rockets with their assets, primarily their future first-round draft picks. And for a player such as Jermichael Green, who is an expiring contract, that should help. I doubt you'd have to give up a first-rounder, because with Memphis, all they're trying to do is get something rather than lose them for nothing in the offseason. Now, in Jonathan Fagan's story at HoustonChronicle.com, he writes that the Rockets are willing to use their first-round pick to sweeten offers, but after 3 drafts without a first-round selection, they do not plan to use the pick just to move a contract. He also points out that it's not anticipated that the Rockets would look to move Brandon Knight's contract to get underneath the luxury tax. there are actually reasons beyond that. Brandon Knight, of course, has not played a lot for the Rockets this year, making $15 million a year the next two seasons. Took back that bad contract in order to shed an even worse one in Ryan Anderson this past summer. And the reason, beyond the fact that they need to get younger and those obvious statements that the Rockets, in my opinion, are going to be hesitant to include Knight and especially first-round picks at this year's deadline, is because they can become really useful this summer and at next year's deadline. Because right now, Brandon Knight is not a positive asset. He's a negative asset, 2 years left at $15 million per season. Well, once the summer comes and Brandon Knight becomes an expiring contract at $15 million a year, he's not going to become a positive asset, but he's also not going to be a negative one. That $15 million a year is going to be neutral, and considering you can use it to make the math work, that's very helpful for the Rockets. Similarly, their future first-round picks, if you were to trade your 2019 first at this year's deadline, it's not just that you can't package that this summer, it's also that until the draft passes, you also can't include your 2020 first-round pick in potential offers. So if you deal a pick, and I would say the 2019 is the only one I think they would even consider dealing, certainly not anything beyond that because of the rule that you can't trade consecutive future first-round picks. Maybe if you deal the 2019, it's okay because as soon as the draft passes, you are eligible to trade your 2020. Once the 2019 first is used, it's not like you then can't use your 2020. The rule doesn't work in that stringent of a fashion. But the real point that I would make as it pertains to this year's deadline, it's important that you don't miss the forest for the trees, in that some extra rebounding help, a little bit more depth up front this season, sure, that's the best way that in this current 2018-2019 NBA season, you can optimize your current roster to have its best chance in May, hopefully to get back to the Western Conference Finals and then see what happens against the Warriors at that point. Big picture, when it comes down to the next 5 years, the $64,000 question for this Houston Rockets franchise is, who is the Robin to James Harden's Batman? Right now, it's Chris Paul, but no one expects that to last forever. It might already be eroding. His performance has certainly declined this year, although you can make an argument that maybe it's been related to his health, and now that he's getting healthy again, maybe he still has that hashtag playoff CP3 left in him for one or two more times. We can hope so, but regardless, he's 33 years old. He's in year 14. Father time stops for no one. It's not that Chris Paul won't be a productive player, but at some point, whether it's already happening or is going to happen in the next couple of years, he's not going to be a superstar-level player. I don't think, based on how cerebral he is, that he's going to become unplayable, but at some point, Chris Paul needs to transition, and he may already start to be doing this, into a number three role, basically a supporting actor rather than one of the two lead dogs. Well, in an NBA where you're going up against the Warriors, and we've already seen what the Lakers are trying to do around LeBron James, James Harden, as great as he is not going to be enough to carry the load by himself as the only serious all-star on a team that can win a title. So for the Rockets, everything they do, you want to upgrade your roster now, yes, but you don't want to hurt your options down the line when it comes to pairing another superstar with James Harden. Now, they will go after Anthony Davis. I said it earlier this week. Of course, the Rockets will place calls. But number one, I think that it's unlikely that the Pelicans deal him at this deadline. My guess is they wait until the offseason because they'll still have nearly as much leverage, certainly over the Lakers at that point. And the Celtics will be back in the game. They can't deal for him now because of the Rose Rule with Kyrie Irving's existing five-year contract. They can this summer once Kyrie Irving is not on that contract anymore. And secondly, even when we get to this summer, while I would love to see the Rockets get Anthony Davis, he's 25 years old, his market will be so big, I don't know that they have the goods because the Rockets' first-round picks, as long as James Harden is here and healthy, they're not going to be that good. They don't have any dynamite prospects. They have decent ones, but nothing great. Guys like Isaiah Hartenstein, Gary Clark, Daniel House Jr., best case, but that's if you're able to re-sign him long-term. More on that in segment three in just a few moments. But my guess is that the Rockets would probably need to get creative, and it would probably take more of a distressed asset than what a 25-year-old Anthony Davis is or would be. For example, the way the Thunder got Paul George, it was a situation where, number one, I don't know that people saw Paul George quite as the top 10 player that he's turned out to be And secondly, it was thought to be such a foregone conclusion at that point that George was going to L.A. the following summer in free agency, that his value was significantly depressed on the open market to the point where the Thunder got him at a discount. Now, it wasn't quite as much of a discount as it seemed. Victor Oladipo became a much better player in Indiana than a lot of folks expected based on his production in Oklahoma City. But the point was, from a market value standpoint at the time, his market was not where it should have been, and the Thunder basically acquired him as somewhat of a distressed asset. Anthony Davis, while there's some talk he could end up in L.A., he is so good, and the signals, at least to this point, he has not said L.A. or nothing to the league. I think the market would be greater now than it was for Paul George then, for AD now, that is. So in that particular case, I don't know if the Rockets have what it takes. I'm sure they'll try. They'll offer four first-round picks like they did for Jimmy Butler. But ultimately, I think that's why the Rockets were so heavily involved in the Butler stakes, because with Butler about to turn 30, also some attitude concerns, about to become a free agent, that was more of a fit. Sixers offered a little bit more. But ultimately, my guess is that it's not Anthony Davis. I would love to be wrong. It's someone else whose contract comes into play maybe this summer, maybe it's at the deadline next year. But the point is, that's where Brandon Knight's contract, perhaps to match salaries. But beyond that, even if the Rockets don't need Brandon Knight to match salaries, let's say that the other team is interested in Eric Gordon, who I could see becoming a trade ship if the Rockets aren't able to feel good about extending him once his deal runs out, his current one, that is, in 2020, then yeah, I could see Eric Gordon being a trade ship, maybe P.J. Tucker at age 34. Well, you know what, Brandon Knight, even if you don't need to match salaries, you know what he can do? Brandon Knight, in the absence of the Rockets having a premium asset in terms of a very high draft pick or a top-notch prospect, what you can do with Brandon Knight, you can use that to absorb another team's bad contract. He's expiring. You can take a bad deal from another team that is selling off a superstar, and at that point, maybe that's how you bridge the gap from the fact that the Rockets, their first-round picks aren't that good, their prospects not top-tier, then maybe Brandon Knight on an expiring $15 million deal is how you bridge the gap, because you can use that to offload, or for the other team to offload, that is, a bad contract of their own. So that's why I don't expect to see the Rockets that aggressive in terms of future first-round picks. Maybe the 2019, only because once the 2019 draft is over this year, you can then deal your 2020, but certainly nothing beyond that, certainly not multiple first-round picks. And with Brandon Knight, maybe if it's a Courtney Lee or a Kent Bazemore, a contract that also has an extra year on it, you would move it. But I don't think the Rockets are desperate to move that Brandon Knight contract, because I think, big picture, they see that as useful. Same with the future first-round picks. That's the best assets they have, the future first-round picks, because it's like a new car that hasn't been driven off the lot yet. There's so many directions that teams could go. That's why they offered four first-round picks for Butler. It's the best that they could reasonably do with the assets they have. And with Brandon Knight, you can use that not just to match salaries, but also to potentially take a bad salary from a team that's trading a superstar. So to me, that's why the Rockets, I think you're going to see them, you know, they'll trade Marquese Chriss as a salary filler, certainly. They'll use future second-round picks, but they're going to be hesitant to move future first, maybe one, certainly not more than that, and I'd be surprised if they even move one. I think they want to keep their first, keep the war chest as full as possible, picks and prospects to use for superstars, and Brandon Knight's expiring salary this summer and at the trade deadline next year. That's the ticket that can get the Rockets potentially in the door. And what the Rockets do at the deadline, yes, they want to optimize this season, but big picture, what's hanging over this franchise, who over the next 5 years, what's left of James Harden's true MVP prime, how do you optimize that? The way to do it, you've got to get an all-star. They'll try at the deadline. I just don't think it's likely. I highly doubt Anthony Davis is dealt anywhere, although certainly Daryl Morey will try. But assuming that does not happen, will they optimize their team now? Yes, and they should, but they will do it in such a way that does not compromise their ability to do what needs to be done this summer or in future seasons, which is potentially find another all-star to play alongside James Harden in his remaining prime MVP years. So when it comes to the deadline, just remember that focus. You do want to upgrade now, but it's important to remember that the upgrade you do now doesn't need to hurt your ability down the line to do what takes for a bigger move to make sure that James Harden has the help he needs for the remainder of his prime. Final thoughts as we wrap up our trade deadline preview show. Another name that's going to come into focus a lot over the next week is Daniel House Jr. And I get asked on Twitter almost every day, it seems like, at Ben Dubose, do you think there's a way that the Rockets can bring Daniel House Jr. back? And quite frankly, I'm stunned by the pessimism. I respond to every one of them the same way. Yes, I'd be shocked if he's not back. So as a refresher, the reason we're in this standoff, House is on a current two-way contract, which ran out of NBA service days. That two-way contract is up at the end of the year. The Rockets could unilaterally convert that to a standard NBA contract. That's what House wants Houston to do, and that would allow him to hit free agency this summer. However, because this is only his first season on his deal, and in Houston, the Rockets would not have any bird rights, and it would be very comparable to the Luke Bamute situation last summer, in which it'd be very difficult for the Rockets to retain him. Maybe they could use the mid-level exception, but even if they use that, then it means you can't retain Austin Rivers, who is also on a one-year deal, or potentially Kenneth Faried. So the Rockets, they don't want the scenario in which House becomes a free agent this summer. They liked what House provided this year, 3-and-D option, very athletic, can put the ball on the floor. They want to keep him long-term. So the reason he's not here is not they don't value him. No, it's that they want to keep him beyond this season. And the Rockets' offer was 3 years at the league minimum so that he would not hit free agency until 2021, when Houston would then have his bird rights. House thinks he can get a better deal by hitting free agency this summer. And perhaps he could, but he gave away a lot of his leverage when he signed that two-way contract. So since he was sent down 15 days ago, House has not even played in a single game at the G League level with the Vipers, which tells you that there's still negotiating going on, because it's not like he's not going to play the rest of the season. Just because he had a nice 15-game run, I don't think that he's just going to sit for 6 months, do nothing, and then expect to get significant offers in free agency. He knows he needs to play basketball. He and the Rockets are just trying to buy time. So as far as what's going on, there's a couple of possibilities here. First, the trade deadline. If the Rockets don't feel comfortable in their ability to get him on a 3-year deal, if they're going to lose him this summer, no matter what, and whether they convert him or whether they keep him on his existing two-way deal, unless he agrees to a multi-year deal, he is going to become a free agent this summer. It might make sense to trade him to some other team that has better means. The Rockets capped out in the luxury tax for the foreseeable future, so they don't really have avenues. They only have the taxpayer MLE at that, not even the non-taxpayer, let alone cap room. Maybe you can use him at the deadline as an asset to a team that's in a better financial situation to potentially retain him this summer after giving him another trial run for the remainder of this year. So he could potentially be a trade asset. If you think you might lose him anyway, then maybe you do explore what you can get for him at the deadline. More likely than that, though, what I think is going on is that the reason the Rockets have not offered more than the minimum for 3 years, the only way they could do that, and it's not much more, but they have about $3.5 million left of their mid-level exception, which they've used thus far to sign Isaiah Hartenstein and Gary Clark to 3-year deals. They have a small chunk of that, about $3.5 million is the max that they would go, but right now they don't want to commit all of that money, because you can potentially use that to get a financial leg up on any candidates who shake free in the buyout market. So at this point, we don't really know who the buyout names are yet, because no one gets bought out. Well, a few do, like Kenneth Faried, but by and large, a lot of times you have to wait until the other side of the trade deadline to see who gets traded, who doesn't. And at that point, the buyout decisions are made. There might be fewer buyout candidates than ever this year because there's so much parity, so much teams have at least some pathway to the playoffs. So at that point, once you see who the buyout market is and if they are potential fits with the Rockets, then maybe at that point you feel more comfortable going back to Daniel House and saying, hey, I'll give you a 3-year deal or a 2-year deal. That could be the compromise, going 2 years instead of three, or at least you'd have early bird rights. And at that point, because you know what's on the buyout market, you can say, okay, now I'm more comfortable giving you that deal that involves most or all of what's left of our mid-level exception, to where in mid-January it doesn't make sense to do that, because you don't want to ticket that money when, as it is, you might be in position to get a big name. You just don't know. So either way, be it using him as a trade chip at the deadline, maybe they want that option. Maybe they also want the option of seeing what's left after the buyout market and whether they really need the true mid-level exception. After all, they got a contributor in Kenneth Faried, and they didn't even have to use the mid-level exception. They got him at the minimum. That was a bit of an outlier because Faried, of course, on the final year of a deal that's paying him close to $14 million per season, that is. But as far as House is concerned, once those dates pass, once the deadline is over with, which means you can't use him as potential trade chip anymore, assuming he's still on the roster, and once you figure out what's going on with the buyout market and whether you're going to need that money, at that point, it will get sorted out. At that point, there is no reason to keep him at the G League level. Right now, there is. they're trying to leverage their way, and that is leverage the Rockets can apply. He's not playing basketball, and every week he doesn't play takes him further off the national radar. So they're using their leverage. They're also considering their options as far as the trade market and whether, if they don't need it in the buyout market, maybe they can make a slightly larger offer on the three-year deal, maybe starting at about $3 million a year instead of the league minimum. But once the trade deadline and the subsequent wave of buyouts ends, there is no reason to keep Daniel House on his two-way deal and not bring him back up here. To me, unless he is traded, and that's a possibility, you could use him as a trade chip, as explained, if you think you're losing him anyway, that's a possibility. But as long as that doesn't happen, if Daniel House Jr. is on the roster, and right now he is, I think it's basically a lock that he comes back. There is no reason not to, because either way, he is a free agent this summer. The reason they don't want to convert him to the deal that he wants, which is just a standard one-year minimum contract, is because he would hit free agency this summer and he would probably leave because the Rockets don't have the financial means to retain him, especially if they're not, if they're also trying to retain Austin Rivers and or Kenneth Faried. Well, if he stays on the two-way deal, he's also a free agent this summer because the two-way deal expires after this season. So there is no advantage other than for leverage and other than for buying time to keeping him at the G League level. He's not even playing basketball right now. So this is going to get sorted out one way or the other. And I've seen some suggest that, well, if they convert him, if they do what the agent wants, is Daryl Morey admitting that he lost this battle, this stare down with, I believe, Raymond Brothers, the agent for Daniel House Jr.? Again, not really, because if they don't convert him, if they keep him on the two-way, he becomes a free agent anyway. It's the same scenario either way, so why would you not, if he's going to become a free agent this summer, whether he's on the two-way or convert him, why would you not convert him so your basketball team gets the benefits of having Daniel House Jr. on the floor? The Rockets are not going to cut off their nose to spite their face for some ego trip. That makes no sense. The Rockets, there's a case for why you don't bring him up right now, because you might have more money to throw into your three-year deal or potential compromise if you don't spend it in the buyout market. You also might consider throwing him into trade packages if you're pessimistic on your ability to keep him beyond this season. Those things are valid. But once the deadline passes, once the wave of buyouts is over with, he's not going to stay on that two-way deal, because whether it's a two-way or a conversion, he's going to become a free agent this summer anyway, so why would you not choose the path that improves your basketball team in the interim? I know it's frustrating. I know it's been over 2 weeks. I believe he would help this team, but there's no reason to think that Daniel House Jr. is not going to be back unless he is used in a trade package. If Daniel House Jr. is on this roster, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when he's brought back. Worst case scenario, you just convert him, and at that point, he'll become a free agent this summer in much the same way he's currently ticketed to be a free agent this summer on the terms of his existing two-way. So one way or another, if Daniel House Jr. is on this roster at the moment he is, if he's not traded, he is going to be back. It's a matter, in my opinion, of when rather than if. So I know it's discouraging. I miss the guy too. He could help the basketball team, but he is going to be back. That's one positive that I can leave you with, unless he's used as a trade chip. And, well, if he's used as a trade chip, hopefully he's helping you in other ways by virtue of his play on the basketball floor, giving the Rockets an asset that hopefully can bring them some other talent to further upgrade this team. So one way or another, be it House playing himself, House used as a trade chip, he's not going to languish at the G League level. One way or another, he is going to help you upgrade your basketball team this season. I feel very confident in saying that. So on that relatively positive note, I think that's where we'll wrap it today. As always, I appreciate y'all very much for tuning in and listening. If you want more content before our next show, which will be Saturday morning, recapping a very late night Friday game in Denver, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show us on there at Locked On Rockets. And also don't forget Locked On NBA Net, our Twitter and Instagram handle. That's a curated feed, experts across the NBA covering their teams on this wonderful Locked On podcast network, just like I do in Houston. Also, beyond Twitter and Instagram, we've got a Facebook account here at Locked On Rockets. That's facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, and an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Or if you've got questions about the team leading up to the trade deadline, suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, please don't hesitate to reach out, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Another thing you can do, even if you're not able to advertise yourself, subscribe, leave 5-star reviews, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Megaphone, so on and so forth. Subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. That's how you get the benefit of episodes delivered right to your inbox, even before I can post them on my Twitter feed, at Ben Dubose. And I get the benefit, especially if you leave the 5-star review, of boosting our subscription figures and looking attractive as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And of course, you help out the financial model that enables that type of coverage. And even if you're not able to call up iTunes, Spotify, whatever your normal platform is, if you're working with a smart speaker or a voice assistant provider, you're in the car, you're working out, whatever it may be, you can find our most recent episodes that way as well. Just say play podcast Locked on Rockets, and that should be able to access our most recent show. With those plugs complete, that's where we'll wrap it on this Thursday, January 31st. As always, thank you for tuning in, and come back this weekend, and we'll have more post-game recaps. We'll transition from today's macro episode back to the micro of game-by-game analysis. Rockets in Denver Friday night, in Salt Lake City to play the Jazz on Saturday night. Whatever happens, for better or for worse, we'll have you covered right here at Locked on Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.